everybody. I'm Adam. I'm an addict.
Hi, Adam.
Before I start, can we have a moment of silence? If you have a higher power or a God of your understanding, if you please ask that he share through me, so maybe I can say something that can help somebody or something somebody can relate to or something along those lines. Thank you. Again, I'm Adam, I'm an addict. My home group, as he said, is the Moral Beaverville group, Van A. It's in Beaver Falls, PA, Thursday night, 7:30. Could always use support, so come out, show up. Appreciate your support. My clean date's 1/5/08. So today we have 7 years, 7 months, and 24 days, I think. Something along those lines. So the topic they asked me to share on is 6 and 7. It's an honor to speak, you know, at any Narcotics Anonymous meeting or event or anything along those lines. I need to say, like, this program saved my life, man. You know, and it was by going through the process of these steps, you know, that it's brought me to a place in my life where I never imagined I would be. You know what I mean? It's like talking about, like, lost dreams awaken and new possibilities arise type stuff. I'm going to keep chasing down these papers. And it's only through working steps, you know, that I'm able to get here. So when we talk about 6 and 7, you know, there's 5 prior that I had to work to get here, you know. So it's like we go through and we admit that we are powerless over our addiction, you know, and that our lives have become unmanageable. And I found out through doing that admission is a process, you know, which involves acceptance and all those types of things. And like I go through and I find a power greater than me that can restore me to sanity. And I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to God as I understand Him, you know. And I don't know if I understand God or, you know, I don't know if I'll ever be able to understand something that overstands me. But I try my best to practice principles in all my affairs, which is what I believe the third step to be. Then I get to, like, a point where I'm able to take an inventory of myself. And it's a personal inventory. And like, I list this massive amount of stuff from a whole bunch of questions that I'm asked, not really knowing what I'm doing at the time, but like trying to get in touch with some stuff, you know, and try to figure out what was going on. And then I get to a place where I'm making my second admission, right? I admit to God, myself, and another human being the exact nature of my wrongs, right? Which is another process, getting to the exact nature of that massive amount of stuff that I wrote down and trying to figure out what was really going on. You know, so then I get to step 6 and it talks about, you know, and there's a lot of like fancy things that people say, you know, like fifth steps are the exact nature, 6 steps is shortcomings, and or 6 step is character defects, and 7 step is shortcomings. And like, I believe that they're all the same thing, you know, and I have that belief based on the way that they're written in the book, the way that the information's written in the book. You hear some people say, like, you know, we work step 6 and we get our character defects and we're entirely ready to have them removed, but then when we get to 7, we ask for our shortcomings to be removed because our defects will never be removed. And I don't believe that to be true, because if you read the Just for Today page, you know, a chapter in the basic text, it says specifically, as our defects are removed, right? It doesn't say shortcomings, it says as our defects are removed. We're able to become who we were always truly meant to be, or something along those lines. And then in step 6 here, it says, it's in the first paragraph of the It Works How and Why. It says, the admission we made of the nature of our wrongs, comma, our character defects, right? So there's a comma there that's saying that, like, this is what this is, right? Because there's a comma and then there's another comma. It's necessary if we were to be ready to have them removed, right? So the admission we made of the nature of our wrongs, our character defects, is necessary. So admission, like I said, in the first step is a process. there was a process that I had to go through before I was admitted to any place I've ever been admitted to. You know, I had to go, like, when I went to rehab, I wasn't admitted when I said I wanted to go. Like, people say, like, I admitted I was an addict a long time before I ever, you know, did anything about it. Well, admission's a process, and saying it is a part of the process, identifying the issue and that type of thing. But then there's like a whole process of work that I have to go through in order for me to actually have been admitted somewhere, you know, or for things in my life to be admitted, you know. And it's like it says we started the process of becoming entirely ready, and we will strive to increase our readiness throughout our lifetime. Our job is to become entirely ready and to open our hearts and minds to the deep internal changes that can only be brought about by the presence of a loving God, right? It's talking about deep and internal changes, right? Because we got to the exact nature of what was going on in step 5, right? The exact nature of my wrongs is that I was scared. I was afraid, man. Like, I was always afraid that I wouldn't measure up. I was afraid that I would never be able to hold anything down. I was afraid that I'd never be successful. I wasn't afraid of success, right? But I was afraid, like, because I'd love the glory of success, right? Who wouldn't love the glory of success? Like, you're a successful dude. Like, there's some glory and like, you know, some stuff that comes along with that. But what I was afraid of was the things that are required of a person to be successful. I was afraid of accountability. I was afraid of responsibility. I was afraid that I'd never be able to hold anything down like that long enough, because I was never good at managing anything. My life was unmanageable before I got here. So I couldn't manage to be successful. I couldn't manage to show up. It wasn't until I started learning to come to meetings, right? A meeting a day for the first 90 days, that I committed to something, right? That was the first thing in my life that I'd really ever wholeheartedly committed to, was going to meetings, right? And by learning to go to meetings every day, it's funny how it works. Like, I learned how to go to work. I learned how to go to school. I learned how to show up no matter how I felt, in spite of my feelings, right? Like, and that's like what that was really all about, you know? And the reality of it was, man, is like, I never had a father, man. My dad killed himself when I was a kid. I was 5 years old. My dad committed suicide. He was a drug addict. He killed himself. And like, I never knew what it was to be a man. I never had an example in my life of what it meant to be a man. You know, what it meant to like hold down stuff and pay bills and like take care of my wife and my child. I never had an example of what that was like, except for what I saw on TV, you know? So like, I obviously felt like horrible about myself, because I can never measure up to what I saw on TV. You know what I mean? I couldn't measure up to those kind of things. I couldn't measure up to this imaginary fantasy that, like, you know, I created in my mind. I compare my worst situations, my worst feelings, to the best things that I see of everybody else, you know? And it affects my spirit, right? So when we talk about these character defects, like, I believe that, like, it's all spiritual, man. Like, the good stuff, the bad stuff, like, there's bad spirits just like there's good spirits. There's positive spirits and there's negative spirits, right? And I believe, like, my character defects are, like, they talk about it being, like, your security blanket sometimes, or your tool belt, or you know, those types of things. And it's just like using drugs, man. Like, for a time, using was fun, but then we began to see the ugly side, right? And when you start to see the ugly side of those defects of character and how they hurt people, because I don't have the drug to mask it anymore, right? I don't have anything to cover it up. I have no excuse for my behavior today. Right? I have no excuse for the shit that I do, for the stuff that I do, other than the fact that, like, I'm caught up in the disease, right? And here's my thing, is I'm either working on my recovery or I'm working on a relapse. There's no in between, right? So I'm either living in recovery, practicing spiritual principles, or I'm living in the disease, practicing those principles. I'm lying, cheating, stealing, thieving, all those conniving, manipulating. Those things are like the disease principles, you know? They're fundamental truths, right? And then there's these other spiritual principles like love, honor, honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, faith, hope, right? Commitment, accountability, caring, sharing, like all these things, right? And like, I'm at a place where I've been living so afraid and so scared that, like, I think that I need to practice these things over here because it's what I've always used and it's what I've always got me to where I was at. But in reality, where I was at was like jails, institutions, dereliction, and death. Right? That's my reality before I get here. Jails, institution, homelessness, recklessness, abandonment, death, spiritual death. Like, I feel worthless, hopeless. Like, there's no point in even living anymore, right? That's what those principles got me. For a time, using was fun, right? But then we began to see the ugly side. And the same thing happens when I practice these principles and I'm on the sixth step, right? And it's like, they talk about, like, beating yourself with the bat, right? And it's like, it's not that, like, I think, like, when I'm on the sixth step, I'm just like, I'm doing the same stuff that I always been doing in my recovery. You know what I mean? Like, there's certain stuff, like when I talk about, like, the third step is practice principles in all my affairs and turning it over and you know, stuff like that. Like, there's stuff that I just didn't turn over because I had a reservation, you know, or because I was in denial about how wrong it was. For me, it was women, right? And like, I'm talking about years later, right? Caught up, and like always having that wood just in case on the side. You know what I mean? Just in case, like, this don't work out, I got this over here, right? And like I'm talking about, like, how that puts up walls and how, like, it doesn't allow me to experience and like, how my disease is such a thief, man. Like, it doesn't just rob from me, but it'll rob from the people, like, in my life who want to have a relationship with me because I'm not emotionally available, because I'm afraid that I'm going to get hurt, right? I'm talking about those defects of character that I use, right? And, like, I'm not even emotionally available, so, like, how can I even really feel a true spiritual connection? You know, how can I even really feel the reality, really? You know what I mean? It's like I'm living in a fantasy that I'm creating, and I'm trying to make you believe my hustle. You know, it's a hustle. It's all the same stuff, man. It's a hustle. It's fake. It's phony. It's a facade, right? And I'm just acting as if, right? And I'm trying to change that. Like, I'm trying to change that just for today, you know? Because, like, I've seen how, like, it'll, like, those types of behaviors, whether they're apparent or not to the other person, it decays a relationship. Like, it'll decay the relationship to the point where it's just disgusting and you're not even attracted to the person anymore. You're repulsed. Like, you're repelled. And it's not even, like, the person that you're... It's you. It's me. Like, it was me that I was, like... I just was incapable. You know what I mean? Because I was so caught up and identified with my disease, right? That, I didn't even know... I didn't see a way out. I was in denial. I didn't even know I was lying. I thought it was you, right? It's always... And here's, like, how I'm practicing now. Is, like, when I had a feeling the other day, and I'm like, damn, she's real distant, right? And the reality of it is it wasn't her that's distant, because I ain't picking up the phone. I'm distant, right? And because I'm acting distant, I'm trying to put my stuff and project it onto her and say it's her fault, because it's never my fault, because the self-centeredness of my disease won't allow me to accept responsibility for my actions. You know what I mean? Because the self-centeredness has always been a security blanket for myself, because it can never be my fault. It ain't my fault, it's your fault. And if it ain't my fault, then there's nothing wrong with me. You know what I mean? And it's always about me, man. What can I do? That's what the chapter says. What can I do? You know what I mean? What can I do to make myself and get myself in a place, right? And it's a whole blueprint of recovery for what can I do. You know, there's a whole blueprint of the things that I need to do. A meeting a day for the first 90 days, get a sponsor, use a sponsor, work steps. Every suggestion you ever heard is in that chapter, you know. But like, I believe, like, here's what happens, man. It's like, I feel like the reality of this thing is none of us is ever going to be perfect. You know, none of us is ever going to be perfect. We're human. We're not God. And, like, for a long time, I tried to be as, like, or act, or I've maybe, like, subconsciously believed that I was God. You know, because I try to be everything to all people. You know what I mean? And, like, I can never measure up to everything to all people, because the only thing that can be everything to all people is God, right? And because I couldn't measure up to everything and be everything to all people, I felt like I was worthless. I might as well not even try. So I had this feeling of shame, right? And I think that, like fear is, like, probably the core of most of my defects, but I think the fear comes from the internal shame that I feel. Because I've always been trying to act as if I was God, and I'm ashamed of myself because I'm not God. Like, it's ridiculous to even think that, but the self-centeredness, right, the spiritual part of my disease, will tell me that, like, I gotta be, you know? And, like, it's only through getting outside of me. Like, I always thought I had to put something inside of me to get outside of me, you know what I mean? But it was like I had to look inside of me and get the stuff outside of me and share it with, like, God, myself, and another human being, you know, and get to the exact nature. What exactly is going on, you know? And like, when I'm entirely ready, I'm talking about, like, I'm entirely ready, man. Like, I'm entirely ready for God to remove all my defects of character. But the problem with that is I'm not always aware of all my defects of character. I'm not always aware. Denial doesn't just go away after I work a first step the first time. Or, like, because in reality, this is a just for today program, right? And, like, I need to work all the steps every day, you know, to the best of my ability. Whether I'm on step 12 or not, I need to try to carry the message, you know? And, like, we all have a message that we carry. But, like, what message am I carrying? You know, because I could say all the great stuff in the world and try to sell you a dream. But, like, how am I living, you know? Like, how am I living? And like, I don't know how much time I got. How much time do I got? Okay.
Keep telling the truth, man.
Okay. I kind of lost track of where I was at, but like another thing that this talks about is like in the sixth step it says these are basic human traits. You know, like it talks about our default. I'll read it right. It says in the It Works How and Why. It says, with the help of our sponsor, we write a list of those defects and focus on how they manifest themselves in our lives. Our character defects are basic human traits that have been distorted out of proportion by our self-centeredness, causing enormous pain to us and those around us. So, like, what it's telling me is, like, I'm human, right? And here's where I was going was, I'm never going to be perfect, man. And they talk about like being a human being, right? And they talk about like God's will versus my will, and my will is always the evil will that like does all wrong and never does anything good or anything like that. You know what I mean? And I don't necessarily think that that's completely accurate, but I understand why they use it because they need like some type of, you know, like something to describe what it is. You know what I mean? I think that it's either I'm either in the will of the recovery or I'm in the will of the disease. Just like I was talking about earlier. I'm either in recovery or I'm working on a relapse, right? And when I'm in the will of the disease, like, I'm powerless to a point, right? And those basic human traits that get warped out, like, I never wanted to hurt nobody, man. You know? And, like, if I look at the exact nature of what I was doing when I had that backup on the side, was, like, I was just trying to make sure I wouldn't be hurt, you know? Because, like, there's something about when you give yourself wholeheartedly to another person, man. Like, it leaves you vulnerable, you know? It leaves you, like, in a place where, like, if this don't work out, like, and my mind will just take it to so many places that aren't even, like, the fear, right? The false evidence appearing real, right? The stuff that's not even real, but that I create in my mind that if this happens, this, and this is going to happen, and I'm all the way down here on, like, 5th and, you know, Allegheny, right? Like, not even realizing, like, where I'm at. Like, I'm ready to, like, in straight, like, using, like, disease mode and completely caught up. And, like, but, like, it all stems from, like, I'm just really trying to protect myself. I'm just really trying to do the right thing. And, like, these basic human traits, right? Like, it'll take some of, like, our greatest gifts, you know, and distort them out of proportion with, like, raging self-obsession, right? It talked about that in the sixth step. It says our raging self-obsession, right? It'll take my greatest gifts and distort them out of proportion and make it a defect of character, right? And the reason that that happens is because there's a certain, like, pleasurable pain that it feels like when I'm practicing these things, right? Like, you ever been, like, real passionate about something? And it's like, you just love that thing. You just want to keep working at it, keep practicing, and just get better and better and better, like passion, right? And you're dedicated to it, and you're just going to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. You're focused, right? And that's a beautiful thing, right? But you remember what it felt like to being caught up in obsession and compulsion, right? Obsession and compulsion, just dedicated, using, right? Just, I'm going to get more, get better, right? I didn't think my life was unmanageable for a long time because I was real good at getting and finding ways and means to get more, right? And, like, I the passionate dedication feels a lot like obsession and compulsion. The way I experience them, they feel almost identical with the way that I experience them in, like, the feeling part. So I get confused and I think that, like, this is what I'm doing and I'm dedicated and F you, like, I'm not hurting nobody. And the same things, like, it could be with school, it could be with work, it could be with, like, positive things, like me trying to do the right thing, and I'm caught up and I'm twisting it and making it a defect of character and hurting myself and other people with going to meetings, right? Because I'm not taking care of my family now, I'm not taking care of my mom, I'm not minding my family business, right? But I'm just chasing meetings, and I'm ignoring everything that's important in my life just to go to meetings, right? And meetings are a great thing, and they're necessary to stay clean, right? But like service, all that stuff is necessary, but I need to find some type of balance with that stuff. Like, I need to make sure that I'm taking care of, like, the people in my life immediately who's going to be there for me and who love me and show them that I love them too, you know? But, like, I found out, like, through working this step that, like, the difference between passionate dedication and obsession and compulsion is, like, passionate dedication has a goal and an end point. You know what I mean? Obsession and compulsion is like a dog chasing his tail and it never ends, you know? And it usually takes some time before I can identify which one I'm at. You know, because like I think that what I'm doing is the right thing, and at some point I begin to see the ugly side, you know, and I see where I'm at and what I'm doing and how I've hurt these people, you know, like when I'm chasing and I'm chasing females and I'm chasing all like the next dollar and I'm chasing all these things, I see how I'm like hurting the people who've been there, man. Like I hurt people who look up to me and see me like behaving the way that I'm behaving, you know? And it's really because I just don't want to feel. I don't want to feel, you know? I don't want to feel what I'm feeling. I don't want to feel alone. I don't want to be vulnerable. I don't want to be scared. You know what I mean? And like the reality of it is, man, I got like 7 years, 7 months and 20 some days clean, man. And like I still don't know what to do with my feelings on any given day, man. On any given day, I'm just as likely to act out on a defect of character as a newcomer walking in the door. Any given day, man. It's a just for today program. You know, where my spirit's at is as a result of the things that I'm doing in my recovery, right? And although I'm not a human doing and I'm a human being, my being is related to what I'm doing. If I'm not doing nothing, my being, I'm going to feel worthless and hopeless, right? I'm going to feel like I'm not worth it, right? So it's like, I really need to pay attention to that. And, that's why when I get to step 7, it talks about we humbly asked. We humbly asked them to remove our shortcomings. It's a humble request because I know on any given day, I'm just as likely to act out. Like, there was a long time where, like, I wouldn't mess with newcomers, you know? Like, I wore it like a badge of honor. Like, I'm not messing with the newcomer. I'm going to let them get their recovery. I'm going to let them get... Until my spirit was broken. Until my newcomer walked in the door. And I hurt people because I was caught up in obsession and compulsion and self-centeredness and not worried about anybody else but getting the next one, right? And I remember when that happened and it like really hurt. It hurt my spirit. It hurt a lot of people that were in my life. It hurt people that looked up to me. And like, I hurt some people, man, you know, because I was caught up and I didn't know how not to. You remember that? Mm-hmm. You remember not knowing how not, like, I'm never going to do that again. Right? You remember getting out of rehab like with a great spirit saying I'm never using again? You remember you walk into the cop man and you hit him and you just can't say no. You remember that? You remember breaking your mother's heart and saying, Mom, I'll never do this again? Your sister, your brother, your loved ones, your aunt, your uncle, grandparent. You remember that? Like, I remember that, man. It's a humble request. I know on any given day I'm just as likely. How dare I, like, put down a newcomer or somebody who's struggling with some stuff that I don't understand because I don't understand it. I swear, like, sometimes you see people with, like, some people might rather see somebody used than to struggle with some shit they don't understand, right? But, like, we're all here. Like, we all need to pick each other up, man. And, like, there was a dude early on who I judged the shit out of this dude, right? And, like, I was like, I'll never be like that dude until I was that dude. You know, like I was the one, you know, I might not have been as bad as his ass, you know what I mean? but I remember that, man. And like that dude is the only dude who can help me with where I'm at in certain issues, like with the women and the obsession and compulsion and that kind of stuff, because he struggles with that stuff, man. And like we can help each other with that because pain shares, pain lessen. It's a we program. I can never do this on my own. I was never able to get clean on my own. Never in a million years was I able to get clean on my own. I couldn't do it alone. I can only do it with you guys. I can only do it with your help, right? I can only do it by sharing and trying to get a better perspective on my life. I can only do it by like finding someone who believed in me and wanted to help me in my recovery. That was the only way I could ever do this, right? It's a humble request, right? Talks about it in 7, man. And it talks about surrendering to the surgery of God in step 7. Surrendering to the surgery of God. Like, you know what that means? That means, like, God, please take this from me. Take this from me. I don't want to do this no more. It's hurting me. It's hurting people, but I can't stop. You know? There's, like, things in my life. I'm talking about, like procrastination, man. From the fear, right? I'm at a place in my life that I never imagined I would be, right? I got a good career just for today. I got a nice house, a nice car. I paid for insurance. You know what I mean? Like, all that good stuff. Like, I pay insurance today. I never imagined. Not health insurance. You know what I mean? I started it, but I was like, but I'm working on it. You know? But I pay car insurance. Like, I couldn't imagine doing those kinds of things, right? But, like, God put this, like, since when I was a little kid, man. Remember when they talk about lost dreams awaken, right? Lost dreams, like those dreams you had, right? Lost dreams awaken and new possibilities arise. Ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to be a lawyer. You know what I mean? And like, I would just catch cases so I could go to fucking court and defend myself. You know what I mean? I'd dress in a suit. I tell the lawyer what questions they ask. I take the stand and beat cases, man. And I did it for a long time until I got caught up in a county that I was unfamiliar with and got roofed, right? So don't do that. But like, I always wanted to be a lawyer, man. And it's crazy. Like, I'm in a field where, like, being a lawyer will be beneficial. And, like, it's like, God put that on my spirit again, man. But, like, I'm afraid. Like, I'm afraid that, like, I'm not going to be able to get in because I got a felony. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be able to get in because of this. I'm not going to be able to get in because of that. And, like, all these things, man, I'm talking about the disease on my spirit. You know? And there's that kind of, talk about, like, spiritual warfare. Like, that's what 6 and 7 is really about. Like, 7 is about applying the second and third step to my sixth step. That's really what 7 is about. You know what I mean? But I'm talking about, like, that spiritual warfare that I go through, man. Like, when I'm caught up in my spirit and there's, like, a tug of war going on, like, do it, you can do it, you can do it. And then there's the other part, like, you ain't never gonna do it. You ain't never gonna be able to make it. Why even bother? Don't even try it. I'm talking about the being paralyzed and petrified and not even be able to act like on those feelings. You know what I mean? And just being so caught up that I can't do anything. You know, I can't even really pay attention to the job that I have now because I'm so caught up, you know. And I was at this meeting on Wednesday. And I met this dude right after the meeting, and he said, like, this dude he got a felony, man. He just graduated from law school. I was like, I need that dude's number, man. And I ain't gonna tell you, like, I talked to him, and he's like, what kind of charge you got? I was like, burglary. He's like, I don't know about that one, buddy. So I'm like, don't say. I was like, it's the same thing, man. You know, like, you just gave me hope. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm talking about. That's the stuff that we get from here, man. It's a humble request. God, please. God, please. And I'm talking about, like, he ain't going to do it. He's only going to, like, it's only going to be removed with as much, like, willingness as I put forth. Like, it's only going to be removed in direct correlation with my willingness to act. Like, I could just say I want to go to school, I want to do these things, but if I don't put forth the effort to get where I'm trying to go, I ain't going to ever get there. I got to put in the work. God's not going to just carry me there. He's going to help me. You know what I mean? If I take one, he'll take five and carry me that much. You know what I mean? But, like, I need to put in the work. I need to put in the effort. You know? It's a humble request, man. I got 5 minutes, but I'm done. I want to thank you guys for allowing me to share. Thank you. All right, Adam.
Thanks, Adam, for sharing. All right, our next speaker is Letitia M. by Addicts for Addicts, State College area. I'll give you Letitia.
I'm an addict named Letitia. I'd like to thank God and the committee for allowing me to be here this afternoon to share my experience, strength, and hope on 6 and 7. I found out about this back. Went to another recovering addict's house, and, you know, one of the committee members was there going, I need to find people, you know, to speak. And he's like, well, these two qualify, you know. I'm like, ulterior motives for me coming to a picnic. But when I'm asked to do anything for Narcotics Anonymous, I try, you know, to do what I can do. When I'm asked to share, I normally don't say no. You know, my sponsor told me that if I make a commitment and I say I'm going to be somewhere and I'm going to do something, my ass best be there and my ass best be doing it. Because I need to carry that primary message to a still sick and suffering addict. And the only way that I don't show up is if I'm in the hospital. That's it. If I'm in the hospital, I'm not showing up no place. I have to remember that because I know that there's been many, many addicts that came before me that have taken time to do this, to share. And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for this program. Six and seven, when I was asked to do six and seven, I love six and seven. You know, they're my action steps. You know, I have to apply that action to them. You know, I have to become willing to ask for my character defects to be removed. You know, my character defect list has already been made. It was made in four. I let them be known in five to my sponsor and to my higher power. You know? So it's already there. What am I going to do with it? How am I going to work on them? How am I going to act on them? You know? And how's it? We examine the four-step inventory and we get a look at what these defects are doing to our lives. We begin to long for freedom from these defects. We pray or otherwise become willing, ready, and able to let God remove these destructive traits. We need a personality change if we stay the same. If we want to stay clean. And we want to change. I needed that change in my life. Because my life was a mess. My life was chaotic. And it still can be that way today. It doesn't matter how much time I have clean. To go back, my clean date is November 4th, 2000. And I did not do this on my own. That's why I love this program. We did this together. We stay clean together. One addict helping another is without parallel. And you know, whenever I'm hurting, whenever something's going wrong, whenever character defects are coming out and I don't understand, I pick up that phone or I get in my literature and I ask questions. Because our literature says we never have to be alone. There's always somebody here to help us. Always. And that's important to me. That's why when I put my number down on a list, I was told early on, you put your number down on there, you're available 24/7 for a phone call or to go help. And I write my number down and underneath my name goes call anytime, day or night. You know, a couple of the girls I sponsor, they said, oh, we're not going to call you this weekend. We know you're camping. We know you're at the retreat. I said, you best be calling me. You know? Shit happens. You know? If I'm not available, who's going to be available? Who's going to be there? If I drop out, because I allow these character defects to rule my life, who's going to be there for that next sick and suffering addict that walks through those doors? You know, I have to look at that when I'm looking at 6 and 7. When I'm asking and become willing and become humble to work these steps. You know, and it does. It goes back to 1 and 2. I'm powerless over the disease of addiction. My life is unmanageable. 2, I'm willing to have something come into my life to help me get rid of, you know, to help me work this program, to help me stay clean. And it takes time. It took me a long time and a long road to get where I'm at. I still have shitty days. On Monday, my husband and I got into this big old, oh, let me tell you, character defects were flying everywhere on each part. You know, and I'm like, holy fuck, I want to disappear out of my life. You know, I wanted to run from my life. I wanted out from a marriage that next weekend will be a year that I've been married. But we've been together for 4 years, you know, and I wanted to run. I didn't want to stick and stay. And I said, whoa, my program has slipped. When I want to start running and using looks like a better option, my program is slipping. I'm not working 1, 2, 3, 6, 7. Well, 4 or 5, because I ain't making that inventory. I'm not even doing the step 10, because I'm not taking that daily inventory of my life. So, you know, I have to look at that on a daily, you know, it's daily. This program for me is a daily, daily program. It's really important that I do this. I'm going to be bouncing. I'm always bouncing. You know, and when we go to 6, you know, we ask for that help. And we ask other people, how did you do it? You know, I got information from other people of how they got rid of their character defects, or how they made their list, or how they found out that this is what was going on with them. Because I lied, I sold, I cheated, I manipulated, I, you know, procrastinated, gluttony, you name it, I've done it. And I have a list made. And when my sponsor had me make that list, she told me, wrong page. She told me, write down the character defects that I have. You know, pride is one of them. I can be so prideful that I don't see nobody else. I see no wrong in my life. You know? And she's like, explain what prideful is. What are the actions of you being prideful? And then what's the exact opposite of being prideful? That's what I have to look at. You know? And when my character defects start coming out again, that I see them, I have index cards that have each one of my character defects on them. I pull them out and I read them and I flip it over and I go, okay, this is the opposite. This is what I need to work on. I need to focus on working with others. I need to focus on, it's not all about me. It's not all about how much I can get, what I can get, when I can get, and who I can get it from. You know, I had to accept, and it goes, you know, like I said, it goes back to step one. I had to accept my addiction and my powerlessness over it. I had to find the strength beyond, we have to find strength beyond ourselves and learn to rely on it. We examine our lives and discovered who we really are. To be truly humble is to accept and honestly try to be ourselves. None of us is perfect or perfectly good or perfectly bad. We are people who have assets and liabilities. Important. We are all human. You know, when I did that fourth step, I listed all the shit I did wrong. All the shit that's been done to me. You know, then at the end of the fourth step, it asked for my assets. I'm a good person, regardless of what all I've done, what all shit that's happened. I'm a good person. And the defects are good defects also that we're asking to have help on improving them. Because they're not all bad. They are not all bad. And I had to look at that and evaluate that and realize that not everything I do is wrong. There's some things that I think wrongly about. But if I don't act on those wrong thoughts, life is good. It's when I put into action what is in my head without thinking that gets my ass in trouble. And I do that still to this day, you know. I still do. You know, I'll go, oh, that's a really, really good idea. And I jump and I do it. And not thinking about the consequences that lay later on. Oh, I didn't ask somebody else. Because it's not just me anymore. It's other people in my life. You know, I can't just jump and do what Letitia wants to do. Because Letitia is accountable today for her actions. Before, it didn't matter who I hurt or anything else. It didn't matter if my bills were paid or my kids had clothes or a roof over their heads. It didn't matter. You know, today those things matter. So I take a step back instead of jumping in and I talk to my husband. Hey, do you think this is a good idea? And we discuss things. And that's what 6 and 7 has helped me to do. It's helped me to stop and look at things to be able to discuss with another human being or just look at things before I even do anything. You know, on the way up here yesterday, we just had grandbabies, two of them, within 2 weeks of each other, and you know, both of them are having some health issues, and he said, well, I was thinking about renting a car and taking, you know, his daughter and grandbaby and her husband down to the Children's Hospital to get all checked out. And I said, well, that's a really good idea. I was thinking the same thing. Instead of having them go down, you drive them and I'll watch the other two babies and grandpa. So, you know, that's what I'm able to do now, you know, is to have a conversation with somebody and let things go. Earlier today, I called my mom. My mom don't know who I am. And that's one of the character defects that I have. I'm pissed off at my father. It's a resentment. Resentments will keep me sick. I'm working on it. My father put my mom in a home 2 years ago without consulting any of us kids. I just found out 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, where my mom's at. So I've been trying to build a relationship with my mom. And my mom don't know who the hell I am. She has the slightest idea who I am. My mom has Alzheimer's. But I'm trying. To mend those relationships by working 6 and 7. You know, I make that lesson. I humbly ask him to remove my shortcomings, to remove my defects of character. And it's not going to be when I want it done. It doesn't revolve around me, revolve around when I want it done. Shit happens when I least expect it to happen. You know, and I got told, you know, one day by an old timer, I got told, be careful what you pray for. Because it will come in many different sorts of ways. I ask for patience and tolerance. I get a sponsee that I learn patience and tolerance, or I have a child that I learn patience and tolerance dealing with their issues. And try not to allow their issues to become my issues. Because I'm a very big enabler and a very big things got to be this way and that way. And it's basically my way or no way, you know. And 3 weeks ago, I had a big eye-opening on that one, too. I had to step away from my daughter and say, you're the mom, not me. You do it how you see fit. And the consequences are yours. And that's through working this program. And having that taken from me of wanting that control over this is how you take care of this child. You know, she had other people yell at her. And I was like, yes, I didn't have to. You know, but because what I really, really wanted to do was I wanted to take that child and tell my daughter this is how it's supposed to be done. That's how I want to do it. That's even with, you know, the girls that I sponsor, this is how it's supposed to be done, you know. But I have to remember what was done with me when I came into this program. I was given enough rope to hang myself for this first 6 months, you know. And then my sponsor looked at me, are you done? Are you ready? I'm like, ready for what? She said, to work the steps. I said, I've been working them. She said, no. Not the way the book says. You know, I wanted to do it my way. My way don't work. It didn't work when I was out there. Why would it work now? And that's, you know, that's the important thing, is me realizing that I don't have that control. That I have to be willing, and I have to be accepting, and I have to take life on life's terms and live life to the best of my ability through working these steps. Through working this program, working with others, you know. Adam was talking about service work. Yeah. Service work and working with others is you know, very very humbling work. My husband and I have opened home groups in our area, and we go every week, 7 o'clock, Clearfield, by Addicts for Addicts, on Market Street, 7 o'clock every Tuesday night. We are the only two people at that meeting, and it's been that way for a year. And we opened it because we've been told, we need more meetings. Okay? So we set. And it says, where one or more addicts are gathered, there's a meeting. We pop open the basic text and we run a meeting for an hour, just the two of us. I know more people will come when they're ready. You know how many times we've wanted to say, oh, fuck it, we got this going on, we got that going on. You know, I can't do that. You know, I can't do that. So that, you know, that is so humbling. And then, you know, I've done area service. And talk about differences, opinions, and this person wants this, and this person wants that, and you want to have unity, and you want to have, you know, everybody working together and understanding, and defects of characters flying everywhere. I'm like, I want to get up and I want to walk away. Or I want to get up and I want to start punching people. And I'm like, I know getting up, walking away ain't going to help them because they still ain't going to understand. And if I get up and punch them, I'm going to be charged. You know? I can be charged and I ain't looking at being charged for nothing. Charge my credit card, but that's okay. I know I don't get paid. You know? But I'm getting better on accepting people as they are, you know, and I'm getting better of working on my patience and tolerance of other people, because I have a major issues on that one. You know, it's a work in progress. This is a work in progress. I'm never going to fully get this program. I will have to work this program to the best of my ability until the day I die. And hopefully, that the day they burn me, I will be clean. I will be clean. I pray that. And things are slowly coming back into my life. That I have got that have left my life because of my using and my the way my life was. Things are coming back. Things are being worked on. Today, when I'm pissed off at somebody, I can calmly talk to them without screaming and throwing things and smashing things. Or I can politely get up and I can walk out my house, slam my door a little bit, but walk out my house, no words out my mouth, and go out in the country. I love being here. This is my second time being here. And 10 years. I live in the country. I have a farm. So I can go talk to my animals about what's going on at my house. And my animals don't talk back to me. That's the greatest part about it. You know, they don't talk back to me. They're just like, oh, Mom. And that's it. And I feel better about it because I've talked, you know? I've my higher power knows and I've let it out my mouth. Plus, I also journal a lot, which helps me with my character defects. But it's accepting life on life's terms. I have to accept what's going to be thrown at me. Do I like what's been thrown at me 3/4 of the time? No. But I have to accept it. And I have to move on. Because if I allow it to eat at me, my program's in jeopardy. And I've been there. I've done an emotional relapse. And it wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty. It took my daughter at the age of 20 to look at me and say, "You're not making meetings. You're a bitch." And I'm like, "I work 12-hour days. What do you mean I need to make meetings? I'm doing what I need to do. I got a roof over my head. I got, you know, I haven't picked up." But my life was unmanageable. My character defects were running rapid. There's times I don't see what's going on, and it takes another addict or somebody else in my life to tell me what's going on. And I have to be willing and accepting of them to tell me that. I have to accept what they tell me. I may be pissed off at them and want to tell them, "Get the hell out of my life, get the hell out of my house." But when they grow up in this program, they know. You know? And I have to accept that. And one of, you know, my character defects is I don't want to accept it. I don't want to accept that I have issues. I don't want to accept that I blow up at the littlest things. You know, I'm a human. And that's what happens. And like I said, as long as I work this program to the best of my abilities, I attend meetings, and I hang around other recovering addicts, I'm going to stay clean. And I'm going to get better one day at a time. It tells us one day at a time, easy does it. And to keep it simple. And with that's all I have. Thank you.